And now it's time for your financial destination with Roger Hamilton, with strategies to enhance or improve your retirement income.
Hello, I'm Roger Hamilton, and welcome to the Financial Destination Show. So over the next 20 minutes, we'll discuss strategies, ideas to help you grow your investments and to enhance your retirement income. One of the concerns these days is protecting your investments, your income, and your cash flow. And the words we are hearing, inflation, and maybe recession. How it all relates back to you, your situation, what's happening, how it impacts your employment income or retirement income. Well, here to give us his insight on the economy, to answer or enlighten us on some of these topics, our special guest, Frid Bergman, Senior Policy Analyst, APAC, Atlantic Provinces Economic Council. Good morning, Frid.
Good morning, Roger.
And glad you've joined us. I've had several requests from listeners to have an economist on the show to explain to the audience what's going on and what's going to happen. Are you ready?
Yes, let the games begin.
Let's lead off our first hitter. So the first question today, what is the current inflation rate and how is that number determined?
Well, the inflation rate here in Nova Scotia, Roger, is running at about 8.8% in May, which is the highest it's been since about January 1991. That's the last time it was that high. And then prior to that, October 1982, it was also 8.8%, and even higher than that in the early 1980s. In Canada, it was 7.7% last month, the highest since January 1983. Inflation is determined by Statistics Canada, so they look at a basket of goods, which includes all consumer goods and services, and they're looking at a weighted average level of prices across these various goods for the average household basket. So they look at the average household to try to determine, you know, what do they spend their money on typically in a given month, and then they look at those prices for each of those goods and services, and based on weighting of how they spend their money, they determine what that inflation rate is. Now, they tie it also to the Survey of Household Spending, which looks at average spending per household by province and city. And it can also be looked at by income quintiles or ranges, because people's spending patterns change based on their level of income. And so, you know, people on lower incomes may not spend as much on travel because they can't afford travel. They might not spend as much on luxury items like expensive cars or appliances. Or even, you know, they might not own their own home. They might be just renting. So their spending patterns are quite different than for middle or higher income people. But when they measure inflation, they're measuring it across the entire economy, not for any one given individual. So your own experiences may be different than what the actual measure of inflation looks like.
Is inflation different globally? Is Canada, how are we comparing to the other G7 economies? Is Canada inflation rate average? Are we below others? Are we higher than others?
Well, we're kind of middle of the pack in a way. I think we're the fourth highest right now amongst the G7. You know, the UK was running at 9.2% last month. That's the United Kingdom. The US was running at about 8.6%. I think Germany was close to Canada at 7.9%. And then the rest of the G7 were running below that. And Japan was a real outlier. They only had, 2.5% inflation. But for the most part, globally, inflation is higher.
Now, just a few years ago, let's go way back to 2019, 3 years back, prior to COVID, everything just seemed to be running just fine. We had low rates. In fact, we almost had negative rates. Then I guess the COVID global pandemic, early 2020, is that the main culprit of today's inflation?
Well, it's certainly partly related to COVID. Here in Canada, I think the Bank of Canada overnight rate, which is the kind of benchmark policy rate for setting interest rates in Canada, it was as low as 0.25%. So not quite negative, but depending on how you look at it, you know, you could argue that it, you know, in real terms, it might be negative once you factor in inflation. We also had a lot of quantitative easing during the pandemic. So the Bank of Canada was actually buying federal and provincial government bonds, and this helped increase liquidity, especially for governments, but also increased liquidity in the financial markets. And by doing this, this also helped fund pandemic supports and spending, because we had higher government spending during the pandemic, especially at the federal level. But there were also increased costs for governments as well. provincial governments. And the beauty of, you know, when the Bank of Canada gets involved in buying bonds, a lot of times these bonds can be guaranteed by the federal government. So the federal government has a AAA credit rating. So that means lower debt servicing costs for provincial governments as well, because of that premium credit rating that the federal government had. So there's some that argue that during the pandemic, actual increased spending on government supports helped increase inflation. But there's obviously other factors at play, such as higher commodity prices, supply chain disruptions, lower capacity utilization during the pandemic due to lockdowns and restrictions, higher wage pressures in some industries. And in some cases, firms had to increase prices to make up for losses during the pandemic or due to higher production costs now, whether it's higher wages or non-wages wage costs today. So there's certainly a number of factors at play that are driving that. And even inflation started to creep up last spring, I think in April of last year, it started to creep up here in Nova Scotia. So inflation's been creeping up for about a little over a year now.
If it's a supply chain issue, mainly due to the pandemic, supply chain, not really excessive demand, but we had to stay home and production companies were shut down or half staff and all the tech chips were gone, so we had short supply. And as consumers, let's say we were buying 50 cars a month from a certain dealership that can only now supply us with 25 cars. So we aren't asking for more cars, we simply want our 50 back. Once the COVID situation is eased, shouldn't the supply chain just sort of rev back up to normal? And if we can buy the 50 cars again, and if supply chain goes back up to normal, will inflation deflate?
Yeah, it's not an easy problem to solve. Here in Canada, in the second quarter of 2020, we saw industrial capacity utilization bottom out at about 72%. Over the last four quarters or so, it's been running at about 82%. So, you know, capacity utilization is pretty well back to normal, but we still have supply chain disruptions. And those are a little more difficult to resolve because some labor shortages, so labor supply is part of the supply chain as well. And you know, you just can't always hire people overnight if there's a labor shortage due to aging demographics. And the other factor is sometimes it also requires infrastructure. So, you know, during the pandemic, Roger, we saw increased demand for goods. And those goods often had to be shipped, you know, by container ships, for example, if it came from overseas, say Asia, for instance. And so, you know, increasing capacity at ports takes time. You can't just add port infrastructure overnight. And sometimes that can take a year or two to build in that infrastructure. And we're even seeing that now in our airports with more air travel now, but people need passports to travel, and we need more airport security, more airline staff, and so on, and more flight options as well. So a lot of that pent-up demand has now hit the marketplace as the restrictions lifted over the winter, and now summer's upon us, so kind of heading into peak tourism season. And this is affecting both business travelers, obviously, and leisure travelers. And so once again, these types of issues, whether it's labor shortages at airports or at ports, or whether it's infrastructure shortages at airports or ports or other transportation nodes, these are all kind of factors that have to be addressed to improve supply chains. So not something that's easily resolved.
So kind of a bottleneck, and now is there only one little gate to let all the animals out? They're all trying to squeeze out together at the same time, and it takes an overflow, I guess.
Yeah, and then hopefully nobody gets caught up in a stampede.
That's what you don't want to happen. Here's a question one of our listeners, she emailed me a couple weeks ago, had a question. I'll have an economist on. Her question from Anna. Anna, if you're listening this morning, to follow up, do you see this inflation rate as the new normal, leveling off at what it is right now, 6, 7, 8, and something that was $4, a carton of eggs, it was $4 a while ago, now it's 6, the price will stay there now because, well, we'll need it and we'll pay for it. And if inflation falls back to 3%, will the prices fall back, or are we just going to have to live with the higher prices no matter what?
Yeah, certainly for some items, you know, prices are sometimes what you call flexible going up and sticky going down. So, you know, once price increases are built in and people can live with them and businesses see that people are still willing to buy their products or services, even at a higher price, you know, that price doesn't always drop. And obviously once wages go up, a lot of times people don't seek wage decreases. So, you know, as inflation goes up, wages tend to move up along with inflation to some degree, not always to in the same amount. And so this is why, you know, you're unlikely to see all prices kind of drop. What you'll see is inflation level off over time as the Bank of Canada gets us back into their 1-3% inflation band with a midpoint of 2%. Now, that may take a year or two to get there. And so, you know, you would expect that at that point, you know, prices would start to level off and not increase as much. But, you know, not every price is going to go back down to where it was pre-pandemic. I'm afraid, you know, there was an economist in New Brunswick today. It was in one of the local newspapers up in New Brunswick from an economist from UNB, Herb Emery, saying that, you know, he's expecting gas prices to hover around $2 for the long term, i.e. once that price becomes established and people can kind of, you know, change behaviors and live with that price, you're unlikely to see it to drop significantly.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to have some more inflation talk with Fred Bergman right after this short break.
Does it seem that after several years, you're just getting older and your investments are not doing any better? What should you be doing? Are there simple strategies to improve your retirement income that you weren't advised on, you missed out on, and wish to change? Stay tuned. Roger will cover these topics. At any time, email your questions to Roger at yourfinancialdestination.ca or call 902-499-5879.
And we're back. We're back with Fred Bergman, Senior Policy Analyst for APEC, Atlantic Provinces Economic Council. Let's continue, Fred, with our talk on inflation. So even with the rates, higher rates, we still buy things. Do you see consumers adding more debt to try and take on purchases with less cash buying power? So I'm still going to buy it now, but somehow I'll pay for it later, which may end up costing me even more.
Yeah, certainly there's a risk of that happening, Roger. Luckily here in Atlantic Canada, typically our debt levels relative to our disposable income, which is our after income tax income, tends to be lower here than in Canada. So in the latest data for the fourth quarter of last year, I think household debt to disposable income in Canada was running at around 182%. And here in Nova Scotia, it was running at only about 136%. So our household debt relative to our disposable income was much lower in Nova Scotia than in Canada. And that trend you would see for all of the Atlantic provinces in general. Now, it's going to differ from household to household. Obviously, those on lower or fixed incomes might not be able to afford to take on as much credit as at reasonable rates of interest versus other households with middle or higher income. But certainly any debt they take on, they're going to bear higher debt servicing costs, because not only do we have higher inflation, we also have higher interest rates. So, you know, you have to, if you want to buy the same basket of goods and services, now you have to spend more. And if you don't have the income to fund that, then obviously you've got to borrow somehow, whether it's from family, friends, your bank, your credit union, your payday loan company, whatever it may be, this is going to cost you more. But at the same time, you're going to see consumers forego some decisions because they're not going to be able to afford to buy necessarily the same basket of goods and services that they have in the past. So they may opt to spend their money on home heating fuel to heat their home, but they might opt to cut back on other expenditures like, say, travel, to try to offset some of those added costs.
Try to still live within their means. So I guess the other question, are there more interest rate hikes to come? And if so, should there be?
Yeah, certainly, you know, we've seen the overnight rate from the Bank of Canada increase by about 125 basis points. It's now sitting at 1.5%, or in other words, 150 basis points. I think on July 13th, within the next week or so, they have another policy rate setting date, and it's expected that they're likely to raise rates by at least 75 basis points. The odd economist is even expecting 100 basis point increase. So they're going to at least get up to probably 2.25% next week. And of course, other interest rates will follow suit, whether it's for your mortgage, your loan, your car loan, your line of credit, your credit card, and so on. You know, you'll see those rates creep up as well. Now, the Bank of Canada has to do this in increments. So they do it in baby steps to try to monitor what happens, how the economy reacts to it. Is there any signs of the economy cooling? Is there any sign of inflation starting to plateau and level off? We haven't seen it peak and level off and start to decline yet. So they're going to keep increasing interest rates in increments. And after July 13th, they have another three rate setting dates this year. And they're expected to get to at least 3%, what's called their neutral rate, or maybe even as high as 3.5% by the end of this year. So we're going to continue to see interest rates go up over the next 6 months, and even into next, probably into the next, the first half of next year, you're likely to see continued rate increases to bring inflation under control. Now, it was a very, very early indication. You know, employment growth last month for Canada was not huge. It was still positive. And my recollection is that real GDP only grew 0.3% in the latest monthly data by for gross domestic product by industry. So those are early indications that the economy is starting to cool a little bit. Just a little tiny bit.
Not recession yet. So if here's a question I had from Lester, who emailed me a couple weeks back. And so I'll put it to Lester's words. So if inflation numbers primarily consist of cost of consumer goods, you know, groceries and wages and energy, gas and home heating and housing. Okay. So he says, I see where passing or rising interest rates will, you know, slow down buying because we're, you know, overbidding on houses, keeping prices in check, and mortgages will cost more and borrowing costs more. That lowers demand. But how does rising rates help the consumer buy groceries? What does raising the Bank of Canada rate have to do with me buying milk and eggs? I don't or I shouldn't have to borrow money to buy milk and eggs. How do you explain that to Lester?
Yeah, it's a good question, Lester. You know, in terms of dairy products in particular, including milk, in October of last year, the Canadian Dairy Commission announced that they were going to increase milk prices. And this is farm gate milk prices. So it's not necessarily the price you pay at the store, but it's very similar in terms of the impact on the price. They announced that they were going to increase milk prices by 8.4% on February 1. And if you look at dairy prices here in Nova Scotia, based on the Consumer Price Index for May of this year versus May of last year, well, lo and behold, I think dairy product prices are up 8.4% year over year. So very in sync with what the Canadian Dairy Commission announced. They recently announced that they're also planning on potentially increasing dairy or farm gate milk prices by a further 2.5% on September 1st of this year. So there's another modest milk price increase coming later in the year. In addition, I think on their February 1st announcement, butter prices went up about 12.4% based on the Canadian Dairy Commission's announcements. And when you look at butter prices here in Nova Scotia, May over May, they're up close to that as well. So on par with that, I think based on their September, what they plan to do September 1st, when they announced that earlier this month, they said that feed prices for farmers are up about 22%. Energy prices for farmers are up about 55%. And fertilizer prices for farmers are up about 44%. Mm. So farmers, you know, they have a hard job. You know, they work 24/7. The cow's going to be milked regardless of the weather conditions. They got to clean out the stalls. They got lots of things to do. And obviously, they have to grow crops to be able to feed the cattle. So they're using fuel, they're using fertilizer, and they're using feed for the cattle. So they're facing higher costs, and the farmers are basically passing on some of those higher costs.
I remember those days myself back in the 70s. That's where I grew up. So, yeah, I remember it.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Is it just me, or does it seem like we have a shortage of workers? There seems to be plenty of employment. You know, signs up, staff want it. There's not rising unemployment. Now, we had workers back in 2019 pre-COVID. Where did they all go?
Well, certainly, you know, we have what's called aging demographics, and it's going to continue to happen over the next decade or so. You know, I'm part of that aging demographic, obviously. I was born during the tail end of the baby boom. And certainly, you know, at some point I will retire and leave the labor force. So we're seeing rising labor shortages generally over time and a falling unemployment rate due to these aging demographics. This is why the unemployment rate now is kind of, you know, we're seeing record low unemployment rates that we've never seen, you know, since we've been tracking the data by province back to 1976. And so this is part of the reason why, you know, it looks like, you know, things are improving, but it's because we have less workers. And so the unemployment rate's dropping naturally because of that. Now, during the height of the pandemic, what happened is we hit a reprieve from labor shortages because of restrictions and lockdowns. So businesses closed, people got laid off. And so, you know, there was less labor shortages because businesses were closed. They didn't need people, or people were working less work hours because businesses, even if they remained open, they had to cut back on their hours of operation due to less demand because of the pandemic. So people opting to eat at home, people opting to work at home, and so on. This changed our spending behaviors. Now, here in Nova Scotia, I think labor shortages in terms of the job vacancy rate peaked at about 4.8% last, the final quarter of 2021. But in the first quarter of this year, Roger, it had improved a little bit to about 4.4%. Now, part of the reason is we're seeing stronger population growth. On an annualized basis, my recollection is Nova Scotia's population increased by about 2.2%. In the first quarter of this year. Now, quarter over quarter, I think it only increased 1.8%, but still really strong population growth. Immigration's bounced back with a vengeance post-pandemic. And certainly last year, we saw a very strong net interprovincial migration from other provinces into Nova Scotia. So we're seeing stronger population growth. And this is a bit of a bonus because it helps offset some of those labor shortages. It may not totally offset them, but it's certainly part of the reason why we're seeing job vacancy rates trend down a little bit.
Good, good. For final question, here we go. Older listeners, myself included, we remember the 70s and inflation, stagflation and all that. The $6 million man would have cost a lot more today than he would back then. Now, remember 1980 and 1981, both the Joe Clark government and his finance minister, John Crosby, and Pierre Trudeau came back in power along with his finance minister, Alan MacEachern. So we had two Atlantic Canadian finance ministers. Remember that 21% mortgages and the 23% car loans 40 years ago. Are we there? Are we hit it there, Marty McFly? Are we heading back to the future? Or will we see those inflation rates again?
Well, I'm probably more like Steve Austin with inflation than Marty McFly from Back to the Future. Keep in mind, you know, the stagflation of the 1980s was much more intense than what we're seeing today. So in Canada, back in 1981, inflation was 12.5%. And by 1983, we saw the unemployment rate in Canada hit 12%. Now, sometimes economists, you know, I don't usually track this, but there's an index called the Misery Index, which is the sum of the inflation rate and the unemployment rate. And it peaked in Canada at 21.8% in 1982. If you were to do that same calculation in 2021 last year, the misery index was one half that level. So, you know, inflation was nowhere near, or the misery index last year was nowhere near what it was in 1982 during the height of stagflation in Canada. So we're a long ways away from 1980-style stagflation. You know, yes, we could have modest stagflation go forward. I think the unemployment rate in Canada was still only 5.1% in May of this year, so quite low unemployment rate. It's highly doubtful the unemployment rate will hit double digits, even if the economy does drastically slow down, given we have about 1 million job vacancies in Canada. So, you know, even if you're laid off, there's 1 million unfilled jobs out there in Canada. Now, you've had the right skills and the pay's not too bad, or you're willing to be a little flexible on your pay or your skill set to take a different job in a different occupation or a different industry, there's jobs there to be found. But it's always a challenge to find the right fit, both from an employee perspective and an employer perspective. So, you know, there will still be unemployment. There will still be likely an increase in the unemployment rate as the economy cools, but nowhere near what we experienced back in the early 1980s because we have labor shortages that we did not have back in the 1980s.
So those were not the good old days. Today it still is. So there's about 20 more questions I could ask you, Fred. We have to wrap it up. I want to have you back on the show again in a few weeks if we can, but I'll sign off right now. Let's thank you, Fred Bergman, for coming in this morning and speaking to us. Fred Bergman, the Senior Policy Analyst for APEC, Atlantic Provinces Economic Council. And for all of you, Seaside, we thank you for listening in this morning. Hopefully you've gained some knowledge that helped you increase or protect your retirement income. This show will be on my website in a few weeks. You can visit yourfinancialdestination.ca or call 902-499-5879. This is Roger Hamilton. Until next time, stay safe and stay invested.